Gian Domenico Pico is an Italian citizen with a remarkable career in the international civil service. He served 20 years at the United Nations, rising to the rank of Assistant Secretary General. He was chief negotiator in the talks which ended the Iran-Iraq war and personally negotiated the release of Western hostages held in Lebanon.
I recently spoke with Gian Domenico Pico about the way he sees geopolitical power evolving on the global stage. His predictions may surprise you. He sees the United States, Russia, China, and India emerging as the world's four most powerful nations, and he sees the global influence of the old European powers and Japan on a steady decline. In particular, he says the U.S., Russia, China, and India share a number of economic, political, and strategic interests in common. Pico also says these countries are the four main targets of what he calls strategic terrorism.
A terrorism, in other words, which is there to fight the battle to the end of times. A terrorism which has been devised to simply fight the enemy. And the enemy would always be there, no matter whom. If I was more specific, I would say a terrorism which is there to fight the other because it is the other. And therefore, this kind of terrorism I call strategic. It happens that these four countries have been victim of this kind of terrorism, and in my view, may well continue to be. And therefore, this has only further cemented the necessity, in my view, for those four countries to get together on other issues and to be more in tune with each other.
These countries represent how much of the world population?
51% of the world population, 75% of the military expenditure, and a similar amount of the technological innovation of this world.
I was also struck by who's not in your top of the list here: Europe, Japan, the Arab world. How will these areas be so marginalized in the coming world?
I think we have to accept that different countries and different societies have different priorities. The United States population may be in denial about what I would call the imperial destiny of the U.S., and I don't say this in a negative term, but the destiny which falls on any major power or superpower in this case at any time of our history. But on the other side, we have other societies like the European societies that have really indicated, if not in words, in deeds, that their priorities are basically their own welfare within the boundaries of that region. There is no question that the per capita income in the world may not be highest in Europe, but the standard of living is by far highest in Europe than in any other part of the world. The Europeans are basically living in a system which I will call a stakeholder capitalism system, as opposed to what we would have in America, a shareholder capitalist system. And the stakeholding capitalist system is basically a marriage between a welfare state and capitalism. That system has produced a level of comfort for European societies which they are not prepared to give up. And if you want to be a geopolitical major player in the world, you've got to possess military and technological strength, which requires money to be spent on. There is no way any European governments could do that. They will not get the votes. The votes indicate what kind of priorities society has.
They've made a choice between standard of living and military spending?
They made a choice between standard of living and geopolitical role in the world.
You mentioned these four countries, the United States, Russia, China, and India. How would you characterize what the relationship between and among those four countries will be like in the coming years? Will this be a traditional alliance?
This will be, in my view, an alignment, not an alliance. I think gone are the days when we had friends 100% on every issue. Alignments will be the characteristics of the future, in my view. An alignment means I'm basically in agreement with you on many issues, but on some issues we may disagree, and this will not deprive from our friendship nevertheless. And I think the four countries that I mentioned, the US, Russia, China, and India, will fit very well in that description.
Near the end of our conversation, I spoke with John Domenico Pico about the region he's dealt with most as an international diplomat, the Middle East. I asked him if there is even a small reason to be optimistic about peace between the Israelis and Palestinians.
The story of the conflict in Palestine, again, is a story of lost opportunity. But it is also, and we have to confront the truth in my view, the story of those who have actually killed the Oslo process. Let me just be very risky in this. I have made a point in my life never to enter the fray of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict because I'm too small to make any difference. But I think if we are not honest with what actually happens in the world, we will not be able to deal with the problems. And if we are not, don't have the courage of looking at the truth, we will never find a solution to the problems. I think there has been lost opportunities on the Palestinian sides, and there has been a large part of the body politics in Israel who have systematically gone around to destroy the peace process. They both succeeded.
And to my question about whether or not you're optimistic, it sounds like you're not.
At this point, I don't believe that we are going to have a Palestinian-Israeli peace process. I believe there is simply no will on the table to do that. It just may happen that we have to fix other matters before. What I would hope is that things don't get worse on the Palestinian front. But I have to add something which is very sad to say. I ask myself if indeed the reason why the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is not being resolved is because in this new era, which means after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the problems of the 90s, the Israeli-Palestinian issue is no longer a global issue. You see, in the 80s, when we had a terrorist attack in Israel, the price of oil, the relationship yen-dollar, and the price of other commodity would react within minutes because the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was a strategic conflict. It could have expanded. It could have become something worse, and therefore the world took notice. But if you look at what has happened since the Intifada II has come into being, you will see that on an economic front, this incredible suffering of the Israeli and the Palestinian people have produced no effect on anybody else except themselves. The Palestinian economy is destroyed. The Israeli economy for the last 2 years, for the first time in 54 years, has declined. But outside their own country, basically nobody has been economically and strategically affected. The Palestinian conflict, in my view, is now a local conflict. And accordingly, I think there is really less interest on behalf of many to push for a solution. I think it's a sad commentary, but I have to tell you that even the oil weapon, which was used 30 years ago, I don't think that is any longer an option with regard to Palestine.
John Domenico Pico is now president and CEO of GDP Associates in New York.